What age group would you guess has the most significant increase in mental health disorders in recent years? Well, according to a 2017 Wisconsin Department of Health Services report, the answer is those aged 18 to 25. A presentation to the UW Board of Regents earlier this month corroborated that report, stating that student demand for counseling services has risen 55% over the last 8 years, while the UW system increased available services by only 19%. At the same time, the state faces a shortage of mental health providers for Wisconsinites of all ages, especially in the field of psychiatry. That shortage is concentrated here in northern and western Wisconsin, where 9 counties in our listening area have no practicing psychiatrists at all. So what explains the increase in demand for mental and behavioral health care, and what explains the shortage of accessible services? How might Wisconsin campuses and communities in our region address the difference? Those are the topics we'll explore today on the West Side. And thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on the Ideas Network stations here in western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Rich Kramer, your normal host, is on assignment in River Falls. He's covering the Joint Finance Committee's public hearing on the state budget. We'll check in with Rich at the end of the hour to get a report on the testimony Western Wisconsinites are bringing before the committee. For now, 3 guests join us for a conversation about mental health care in Western Wisconsin. We'll start with 2 of them. Sandy Scott is the Dean of Students at UW-Stout in Menominee. She joins us here in the studio in Eau Claire. Sandy Scott, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And John Ochter is in the studio as well. He's the Associate Dean of Students at UW-Stout, former Director of Counseling Services there. He's also a licensed psychologist. John Ochter, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you.
So a little later in the program, we'll be joined by the Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Jason Stein. And as always, we invite you to be part of the conversation. What experiences have you had with mental health care here in Western Wisconsin? Are you able to get the help you need when you need it? And why or why not? 800-228-5615 is the number to call to share your thoughts. That is 800-228-5615. Sandy Scott and John Ochter, you were in Madison earlier this month to present findings regarding student mental health needs to the UW Board of Regents. Sandy, as the chief student affairs officer who led the conversation, what were the main takeaways?
There were 3 key points that we hoped that we left with the regents on that particular day. The first is that students are reporting increased behavioral health issues and seeking help in record numbers, and you just alluded to some what those numbers are. The second is that anxiety and depression are the most common student behavioral health concerns, and they are increasing. And also specifically that suicide is on the rise, and when there is a suicide on a campus, that can have a widespread impact. And finally, we know that behavioral health issues significantly impact the academic success and retention of our students. Those were the 3 primary takeaways we were hoping folks would understand that day.
Sure. Well, the increased demand for counseling and other mental health services isn't unique to Wisconsin. It's in keeping with a nationwide trend among young adults between the ages of 18 and 25. John Ochter, why is this age group particularly susceptible to mental health disorders?
Well, I think we can come up with a lot of reasons societally that things may have changed over time. The things we focused on with the Board of Regents, and might surprise you a little bit, is that some of the increase that we're seeing, and maybe much of it even, is that we have increased awareness, decreased stigma, where students are more likely not only to be comfortable reporting behavioral mental health issues, but then more comfortable seeking treatment.
Sure.
So as director of counseling center, I would see increasing numbers of students who would tell us that they've had prior treatment. They're getting help earlier, or at least getting diagnosed, and there's awareness that there's help out there. The problem is that it outpaces demand in our communities, as you're alluding to, and it outpaces demand at college counseling centers. We just have not been able to keep up when students come knocking on the door.
So it's good news that the students are recognizing they need help and are getting professional help. The bad news is the funding or the direction of resources isn't keeping up with that.
Correct. So one of the things we think has contributed to that increased awareness and stigma reduction is there have been a lot of resources poured into what's called gatekeeper trainings. So training our teachers, our parents, on campuses, our faculty and staff, to really recognize when students are struggling and ask key questions, and then make good referrals. And these things have been happening with the K-12 system as well as at college campuses. So we've done a great job, or maybe a better job in the last decade, at really saying mental health is important, and let's increase our screening and referral. And now we're at this deficit of help.
Access to mental health resources in our area in western Wisconsin, particularly on college campuses, is our topic on the west side. You're invited to join the call, 800-228-5615. Sandy Scott, what mental health disorders are most common in this younger age group that we're talking, young adult age group we're talking about?
In particular, anxiety and depression are the two that most present themselves with our students, and that can show up in a variety of ways. We also know that for students, oftentimes there can be other diagnoses that they may have had. What we used to see, and John can speak to this too, is it used to be relationship issues and other kinds of issues that would present themselves as the primary concern. But really, anxiety and depression have surfaced as the top two.
Is it typical for people in their late teens and early 20s generally, or is this a shift in demand overall, this increase we're seeing? I suppose some of it is what you spoke to earlier, John.
Well, right. And so mental health disorders most commonly first present themselves in that 18 to 25 age range. That has always been true. It hasn't changed. What seems to have increased is the numbers of people reporting in those age ranges. Mm-hmm. And as Sandy said, you know, counseling centers have always dealt with things that are common to that age group as well, relationship issues, identity development, adjustment to school. But it really has been overtaken by clinical mental health concerns, at least when we're talking about treatment services, what our health centers and counseling centers are dealing with. Students are presenting with these higher levels of symptom reports.
Sandy Scott, is there a difference in demand among these young adults that relates to gender at all?
Well, when it comes to, we know that women tend to seek help in greater numbers than men. One of the interesting things to note, though, is that when it comes to suicide, we know that women and men tend to think about suicide at the same rate. Mm. So women are more likely to seek out help, but certainly men and women both present with anxiety and depression and other symptoms at our centers.
So John Ochter, as a psychologist and former director of UW-Stout's Counseling Center, what changes have you observed in student demand for mental health services over time? In other words, if we look back, you know, several years, has this been a gradual increase, or is it, you know, have there been triggers that make this more of a regular thing that these young people would be seeking mental health services?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been in mental health and college mental health for about 20 years, and there have been changes. And I would say even over the course of 20 years, people in the field have been talking about increases 20 years ago. The increases seem to be at a slower pace at that time. I would say some key events that you might talk about with this generation of students is, you know, they were born after the Columbine shootings, which a lot of people still think about as a marker. But then there were college, you know, student shootings too that really raised awareness of those more severe consequences, anxiety amongst our students for their safety, also anxiety amongst our teachers, our faculty, and staff about students who could be at risk of violence. Those seem to be events that really started to increase those awareness trainings and trying to get students help earlier. You know, the goal is to intervene before something bad happens. So, again, back to that flip side of there's good news here. But those sort of watershed events of school shootings in high schools and on college campuses is when I started to see a spike in kind of the acceleration of students seeking services.
I had a conversation with a university counseling services person about 10 years ago. My daughter was in college at the time, and we were having just a conversation because we had that in common. And she thought that there was that for that group, and this was 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 9/11 was a big trigger.
Yeah.
And of course, these kids were conscious of what was going on and certainly able to observe. So in 2008, if you're in college, you would have been in you know, 7 years earlier, you have been somewhere in the age group of 11 to 15. You know, those people are certainly old enough to know what it did to their parents if it didn't have a direct effect on them. Now your students, you know, very few of them that aren't non-traditional students were born before or at least aware before that all happened. Do you think there is still an impact there, Sandy Scott?
I do. For this generation, the traditional age undergraduate college student, they really have no memory of a world before 9/11. And so they have a perspective about what world safety might look like. But then they also bring that added perspective of, as I mentioned at the board meeting, I have to wonder if the kid sitting next to me in chemistry is secretly thinking about killing me. Most of us can't understand that. We didn't grow up in that kind of localized fear. When I talk with my parents about this stuff, they remember, of course, having to do the duck and covers, right, for the threat of nuclear war. But they never actually had to experience that, nor was there a 24/7 news cycle where it was brought to them, even if it was happening somewhere else, that they could witness that and see it. It's a very different sense of safety that this generation has.
Well, not only the 24/7 news cycle, but with social media,
absolutely.
You know, unless you're really good at screening your social media, you're going to see all sorts of very vociferous political opinions thrown out there, which is not a bad thing to have conversations like that, but usually you have some management of that. Is social media play a factor in this, Sandy Scott?
Social media does play a role, and part of that is that we know that someone can curate an image of themselves on social media that may or may not be authentic.
Right.
And but for a student who already, or even a healthy student who starts to see these images of others, that it's always they look better than I do, they feel better than I do, they're doing more than I am, they're accomplishing great things, that can really start to create a sense of anxiety, even in a healthy individual. So clearly social media can play a role.
We are speaking with Sandy Scott, Dean of Students at UW-Stout, and John Ochter, the Associate Dean of Students and Psychologist at UW-Stout. A little later on, we'll be joined by Jason Stein. He's the Research Director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum to talk about resources in general in as far as mental health services are concerned. Several students from other UW campuses presented their experiences with counseling and mental health issues during that Board of Regents discussion that kicked off this conversation back in Madison on April 4th. Our reporter, Kaylin Schumacher, spent some time at UW-Eau Claire, and she found a mix of students who found frustration and relief when navigating their mental health needs.
Staff at UW-Eau Claire Counseling Services say they've seen more students this year than they did in 2018. But with only 8 full-time clinicians, 3 part-time clinicians, and 4 interns, students like junior Calista Redford are having a hard time getting appointments.
I went this past year, and they were like, oh, well, we're all full. And I was like, okay, I need to have an appointment with someone.
She says the uncertainty with appointments made things worse.
And I just, felt so terrible. I was mad at counseling services. I was like, what if something happened because I couldn't see someone in time?
Lindsay Hine says getting an appointment was enough of a hassle that she stopped going altogether.
I got an appointment. I had to schedule it months in advance, and then when the day came, they canceled it on me because the therapist that I was going to see was out. And then the receptionist tried really hard to get me another appointment, but none of it worked.
But for junior Lexi Warren, UW-Eau Claire's counseling services was her saving grace. Last year, after talking to her advisor about dropping out of college, she was pointed towards the campus counseling center.
This is what our university is here for. It made me feel like the university cared more about me. Not everybody here can tell me that they care, but they provide services that show me they do.
Warren would like to see additional counseling staff so that other students can have a similar experience. She says it would also help with enrollment.
We need those people because we want the students here that are studying here to stay. And they just need to feel like they have somebody to talk to, especially if they don't have any other support systems.
Warren says the one-on-one appointments included with tuition would otherwise be out of reach for many students off campus.
I definitely at that time could not have afforded it. I probably still couldn't now. And so knowing that I can go there every other week was super comforting, knowing that I don't have to spend thousands of dollars a month to pay for this.
After graduating last year, Elijah Freeman sought counseling, which also led him to get his master's degree in mental health counseling at UW-Stout.
Maybe I could be on the other side of the couch, so to speak.
Freeman says that without appropriate help, people can get hurt.
I think the reason that we need more people to do that is obviously there's a demand, and if there is that demand and it's increasing and there's not enough people to meet that, then people fall through the cracks, which can only make those problems worse.
UW-Eau Claire said they will be hiring another clinician next year for the university's counseling services with the goal of helping address the backlog of appointments for students seeking help. Kaylin Schumacher, Wisconsin Public Radio.
So, John Ochter, how do the experiences of those UW-Eau Claire students and, in one case, a UW-Stout student compare with the students on your campus and other schools?
Well, those students just echoed what we heard from the students at the Board of Regents, and what we would hear probably on any Wisconsin campus is that when students get services, they feel like it's really helpful. It even contributes to them staying in school. But the frustration is on the front end of having to wait to get that first appointment, and sometimes even after a first appointment, having to wait for follow-up appointments. So that's the common kind of scenario at our campuses. College counseling centers are doing all kinds of creative things to try to serve more students and serve them differently. So those students were talking in particular about individual counseling appointments. But really to serve more students, our centers with not getting more resources have had to turn to more counseling groups, to a model that's called stepped care, where you're trying to get students into maybe learning some skills for anxiety and depression management, either online or in a group setting, to minimize the need for those individual appointments, because those individual appointments, what we're all used to, that sort of 50-minute therapy hour, those appointments are just at a premium, and unless we add a lot more counselors, we'll probably continue to be so.
Well, and Sandy Scott, what's your response to the student who says they gave up trying to get help because they couldn't get an appointment on campus?
Well, I would always encourage them to still, even if the appointment has to be scheduled out, to still keep that or to take advantage of perhaps another kind of resource that maybe can help them in that wait period time. There are online resources that can be available to students. I know at UW-Stout, we do have an online service available for students. And hopefully there are other people that they can find to talk through their issue that they might be having until. And good. Oftentimes we will encourage them to find support. Many of them, not all, but certainly many of them do have supportive family members, or to connect perhaps with a behavioral health therapist through their insurance, if that is an option for them until they can get into that appointment. But we would always want them to try to, we certainly would never want a student in crisis to go unsupported in some way. And so we would work with them to find other ways that we can perhaps help them until then.
So if I could speak to that just a little bit, because I think I'm not familiar completely with the student's experience that, you know, said what if something bad happened. But almost all of our centers have developed systems on the front end to assess those students who might be in immediate crisis. And so my hope would be that that student wouldn't fall between the cracks, that student would be seen, would be assessed, would be provided with some resources. They may still have to wait for ongoing appointments, but it's not like they walked in and were told, well, we can't see you for 3 or 4 weeks. Usually there's a quicker assessment, and then the wait time might be for that next appointment.
That's John Ochter. Sandy Scott has been with us as well, and they will shortly be joined by Jason Stein from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We'll pick up our conversation about access to mental health care in our region right after that, after our break. In the meantime, though, do you have personal experience with gaps in our mental health care system? How does that impact your daily life, and what does the increasing demand and corresponding shortage of care tell us? Share your thoughts at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network stations of Western Wisconsin, 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, with spring activities including camping, hiking, canoeing, and more. Info on outdoor activities is at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world. Support also comes from Farm Table Foundation in Amory, committed to supporting sustainable agriculture and land stewardship through partnerships and programming and serving Wisconsin food from local farms. FarmTableFoundation.org.
Back pain is one of the most common health complaints in the United States, especially after you get 11 inches of wet, heavy snow in April. Up next hour, Larry Mueller will focus on low back pain as we all learn about the different causes and which treatments have the best result. Welcome back to The West Side. Coming up in the program, we'll get a live report from Rich Kramer on the Joint Finance Committee's public hearing on the state budget in River Falls. For now, we continue to look at access to mental health services in Northwest Wisconsin with our guest Sandy Scott, Dean of Students at UW-Stout, and John Ochter, Associate Dean of Students. They're with me in the studio, and we're joined now by Jason Stein, Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, who joins us by phone from Madison. Welcome to the West Side, Jason Stein.
Thank you for having me.
So your organization, the Wisconsin Policy Forum, released its report about psychiatric care in Wisconsin last October. What brought this particular topic to the attention of your research team?
Well, for one, we had access to some data from the Wisconsin Medical Society that we thought could shed light on an important issue. We have not done extensive research in this area, but we have done some. So in 2015, our organization found that looked at outpatient behavioral health capacity in Milwaukee County and found a lack of access to psychiatrists, particularly among children. So, you know, this report looks at rural areas, the one that you're referencing. We've also found, at least in some areas, some specialties, also challenges in urban areas as well in Wisconsin.
Counties around the state are facing shortages, but northwestern Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin seem to lack the psychiatric care more than most. The Wisconsin Policy Forum report shows 9 counties in our listening area that have 0 psychiatrists. What are these counties, or why are these counties facing such a dramatic shortage?
Right. So you're correct that that area north of Eau Claire is one of the most significant shortage areas in the state. We did find overall in the state that 55 of the 72 counties have a psychiatrist shortage under the state of Wisconsin's definition, and that more than half, 37 of the counties, have a shortage under a federal definition that's a little harder to meet. In terms of looking at why this is happening, particularly in rural areas, I mean, there could be a number of factors in play. This fits into a larger narrative, a larger trend of a declining population and challenges in recruiting professional workers in a number of rural counties in the state.
So most counties do offer the public mental health and behavioral health services of some kind. What are some of those resources, especially for those counties that fall into that 0 or 1 psychiatrist per 30,000 residents category that you were talking about earlier?
Right. So one of the things we did note was, again, there are areas where there are just total shortages, where there's no psychiatrist listed at all in the Wisconsin Medical Society data. We also see, you know, a number of counties like Ashland and Bayfield, where there is a psychiatrist, but less than one, or, you know, multiple counties are sharing a psychiatrist. And then, you know, as well, then, you know, you're seeing some urban areas where there may be a larger number, but then there's no guarantee that that larger number can still, you know, you can still get an appointment quickly, or that, you know, all the specialties are covered. You know, we mentioned child psychiatrists earlier. Obviously, we're a lot of discussion about psychiatrists that would be dealing with people who are in their teens or just out of their teens. So, you know, that's another challenge to speak to as well.
Let's pull back and do a little definition, because we're talking about psychiatrists, particularly in the shortage, and you know, there are different levels of mental health professionals out there, psychiatrists being medical doctors, as I understand it. But John Ochter, I'll ask you, you know, can you help define what the psychiatrist shortage means, as opposed to, you know, access to psychologists or counselors? And can you help us define those terms a little bit?
Sure. And what's being described here is from Jason is definitely affecting us as well. Our campus has a consulting psychiatrist for only 8 hours per month.
Wow.
Which means that our health services primary care providers, which is a physician and nurse practitioner-based system mostly, are having to provide mental health medications to most of the students and referring only the most challenging kind of situations and diagnoses to the psychiatrist. So they've really had to ramp up their training and understanding. which has impacted primary care. And our community is one that's underserved as well for psychiatry. So referring out isn't really an option either, or at least not one where they're going to get any quicker care.
And Sandy Scott, the psychiatrists are generally the ones that can prescribe medications, right?
Correct.
So with that sort of ratio, 8 hours a month, I mean, is that pretty much all these people are able to do is work on prescriptions? I mean, they're not doing a lot of counseling themselves, I assume.
Correct. Well, they are doing some of that, but it's in short time, right? They can only see the person occasionally.
But they're probably relying more on
the
psychologists, the counselors to manage that.
Yes, and we do know that. So our psychiatrist is seeing what I think John would agree with is probably described as our more serious cases or students who require the ongoing management with their medication. And for those students, one of the things we know is that there's been an increase in students coming to campus already having been prescribed psychotropic medication. And that can be a very good thing that they've already had some form of diagnosis and treatment. We also know, though, that for some students, what we see sometimes with first-year students in particular is it's that sense of, I'm coming to college and it's my chance to start over. Mm. And sometimes starting over means I'm going to try not being on my medication because I'm feeling good, because it's exciting to start college and be that first-year student, and they want to, quote, feel normal like other students, and so they make a choice to not take their medication, and that often presents itself in a behavioral issue that we end up needing to work with them on hopefully addressing.
We're talking about mental health resources in Western Wisconsin on college campuses and off-college campuses here on the West Side. 800-228-5615 is the number you can call to get in on the conversation. Kenny from Eau Claire has done that. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Are you talking to me? My name is Jeannie.
I'm sorry, Jeannie. We got that one wrong.
Yeah, that's
welcome.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. The resources for mental health access up in Eau Claire are dreadful, and the Mayo Clinic has their one psychiatrist in Eau Claire is retiring, and they had a hard time finding anyone. And when the psychiatrist tells the patient, well, I want to see you my next earliest appointment, so you go out the desk to schedule, and the next earliest appointment is 6 months or more down the road.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds like what Jason Stein has been describing.
Right, and if the treatment is when the talking with the psychiatrist is only 10 minutes. So what can they do in 10 minutes?
So Jason Stein, you heard what Jeannie had to say. It sounds like a case study in what your findings have been. Is there a shortage of psychiatrists, or is it simply just a resource issue in these communities?
I mean, clearly in some areas of the state, in a number of areas of the state, there is a shortage, and that may, also impact on areas that are contiguous or adjoining. So, for instance, we talked about the areas north of Eau Claire. You have a number of counties that have no, at least listed in the data that we use, no practicing psychiatrists. The data may have failed to capture some practitioners, but then when you consider that, and then you consider, say, for instance, Eau Claire County, there are some practicing psychiatrists, but at the same time, given the number of counties in the region that may lack a practitioner, one can imagine that would put further strain on the practitioners that do exist, because they're, in some sense, they're not just dealing with their county. I mean, they may be dealing with the next county and even the next county beyond that.
And certainly in this region, Eau Claire is sort of a center for healthcare, specialties anyway. I guess my question more, though, was, is this a situation where we have fewer psychiatrists practicing than before, or we have fewer that we can attract to Wisconsin than before? Or is it that thing that John Ochter talked about earlier, that just more and more people are recognizing mental health needs?
Right. So we didn't have data that was able to track this issue through time. We do know that looking nationally, the number of physicians increased by a larger amount than the number of psychiatrists specifically. So in addition to that, we know that within Wisconsin, psychiatrists are
are relatively old, and in particular, the parts of the state where we see the most severe shortages, those also tend to have psychiatrists who are even older than the state average. So, you know, all those things tend to point toward a problem that may be getting worse rather than better.
So, Dean, if I could comment briefly on that, too. So what I hear from colleagues around the country, and granted that's at other universities mostly, is that this is a nationwide problem, the shortage of psychiatrists. And so there's several ways that they deal with it. I already mentioned primary care, but there's also been an increasing number of psychiatric nurse practitioners. So people getting trained at that level, because they're more plentiful, who can sort of fill some gaps. And so we're starting to see that. I talked with someone at Mayo Clinic, and don't quote me on this, but I understand that Mayo Clinic in Eau Claire is trying to leverage their connection to Rochester Mayo.
Sure.
To form a residency program for psychiatrists. So would attract some psychiatrists here, psychiatrists in training, give us a larger pool, and then hopefully, of course, get some commitments for some of them to stay around, because those long waits are really frustrating.
Sandy Scott, access to behavioral health services plays into successful student incomes. It also plays a role in the success of our communities. Mm-hmm. How do these untreated mental and behavioral health conditions affect communities and the individuals who need help?
Well, and I think one of our focuses in talking with the board was also helping them understand that if we can address these issues in a more meaningful way, perhaps, than we are able to right now, ultimately what we can end up with is a healthier workforce. Because if a student at that traditional undergraduate age between 18 and 25 is able to successfully learn how to manage the issue that they may have presenting for themselves, when they surface as an employee, because it is our job to graduate those students, when they then are in the workforce, ultimately that results in less employee assistance programs needed. Of course, they'll still be needed in some capacity, but perhaps not in the same way. And we just have healthier communities in general, resulting in a healthier state for all of us, a healthier state of well-being in the entire state of Wisconsin.
Jason Stein, I'm wondering, did any of the research that you uncovered relate to, you know, are we seeing an increase in substance abuse or other factors because of lack of care? Are we seeing results of that or ramifications of that as far as what's happening in society?
Well, I could point to this. There was a 2017 report from the State Department of Health Services that found that, you know, there is a treatment gap in Wisconsin, which is, you know, the difference between the population in need of mental health disorder services and the population served. And that was a 54% in 2015 among adults. And then among those struggling with addiction, it was more significant, less than the agency estimated that less than one quarter of the 456,000 state residents in need of treatment for addiction received it, which equates to a gap of 77%. So, you know, there is evidence, you know, from official agencies that there is a gap in what the state is able to do and what residents may be in need of.
We're talking about access to health care on university campuses and here in Western Wisconsin in general, and we'd love to hear your story, question, comment. 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call. As we look at these community impacts, another story that's out there, another story we report a lot on, is the whole opioid abuse, and we hear something new about that all the time. Generally, these are things in some cases that are prescribed by psychiatrists for mental health conditions. John Ochter, do you see that playing into this conversation at all? And is there work on campus that's being done related to this particular problem?
Sure. Yeah, so it does play in, and interestingly, we have some data from our National College Health Assessment, which is something that campuses around the country will administer and was the basis of some of the data we shared with the Board of Regents. What it would say about opioid abuse, interestingly, is that at least in our college population, we don't see a lot of it, first of all. The NCHA asks about opioid use not prescribed to you, so this would be students obtaining them illegally or sharing them with each other. And we saw a drop in the percentage between 2015 and 2018 of students reporting that. Our healthcare professionals and our health services think that that's because of the tighter controls that have been put on prescribing opioids. So at least in the college population, the two things that we still see in terms of substance use primarily is alcohol abuse and marijuana abuse also. And that is increasing. Marijuana abuse is increasing, which we think is due to the trend of legalization in some states. So those we really don't see as much of opioid or other illegal drug impacting students. And when it does, it can be devastating, but it's pretty small percentages.
Sandy Scott, you talked earlier that some students may have been getting some mental health treatment while in high school, but trying to not mentioning that to anybody coming in. And of course, with privacy laws that are in effect, there's no way for anybody in the administration or for you folks to know about it unless they self-report. How does counseling services respond to a student that ends up having an urgent mental health emergency?
Oftentimes, it can happen in a couple of different ways. One is if they present themselves in a particular counseling session and it is a concern for that well-being of that individual student, there will be a call to university police to help find that student the right place to get treatment at that particular time and place. We work very, very closely. I'm thinking of the residence halls, right, where there's a large population of students who might have a crisis event. And then we work with our university police are often our first call in those cases. And then Northwest Connections, the police partner with, and as do we, many times throughout the year, because of the diversion program that exists, the student may often talk with a crisis worker, a mobile worker, and then a decision may be made. A decision is made, and what's in the best interest to transport that student, or perhaps to find a safety plan. We do a lot of safety planning for students. Our counseling center does a lot of safety planning for students to ensure, because our number one priority is making sure that that student is safe in that particular moment. But the partnership with Northwest Connections is a good one, and we can and do share that number with students, so students have a number that they can call at any time if they feel that they might be in crisis.
John Ochter, I'm trying to remember. Oh, I had a conversation with a UW Eau Claire student recently where that person described trying to get in to see a counselor on campus, was not able to get the result required, but her father, her parents had insurance that allowed her to go to an outside source for mental health treatment, and that worked well for her. That was a situation where the affordability wasn't a factor, but what if a student needs this outside help and doesn't have a lot of resources to pay for the work that's needed? Their tuition pays for the services you provide, but what if they need to go off campus? Are there any financial options available?
There are, and probably in Menominee we deal with that issue a little bit more frequently. We have a high percentage of first-generation low-income students that might have additional financial needs, and we have fewer referrals out in the community. Fortunately, that is increasing, at least in terms of therapy availability. We do have some resources that work on a no-fee or low-fee, and so we try to provide information to our students. One of them for us is actually on campus. We have a marriage and family therapy training clinic, so that's graduate students in training to be therapists. That will also see our students. They see community members as well, and we have our human services, and there are others who will work on sliding fees. So we try to work with the student. We actually have a case manager now employed in the counseling center that can help students who want those referrals in the community or may need more services than the campus can provide. So we try to serve as a bridge and get them connected as best we can, but it isn't always easy.
Sandy Scott, the Board of Regents discussion earlier this month where John Achter and you presented is part of addressing the behavioral health issues facing students. What else is UW system doing in an effort to try to resolve this shortage or make healthcare accessible to students?
Well, and we really hoped by starting this conversation, which really came about because as senior student affairs officers across the system and we meet regularly, we were noticing that the majority of our conversation was about this increasing behavioral health issue that all of our campuses were facing. And while each of our campuses are a bit unique, no one has been immune from being able to keep up with the demand in this area. So that seemed to be the appropriate reason to elevate this. And we started with a conversation with President Cross, who was very gracious in hearing our concerns and got us before the board. We really hope that that was the start of the conversation. We're waiting to hear. I know there has been great momentum since the presentation, and the board was actively engaged and very interested in trying to really understand. One of the messages from that day that I hope people took away was that we can't resource our way out of this issue. We can't. Resources matter, and of course that is a piece of this, but it is not the only thing that needs attention. We can't policy our way out of it, but we have to look at some of our policies. And so the other thing I think is that it's not just a higher education issue. This is a K-12 issue as well. And it's a larger issue, as we've heard from what Jason has found in his work. And so can we really think about this from a K-16 perspective, I think is important. So while we're waiting to hear exactly what that roadmap will look like, I am convinced that there will be a roadmap and UW system will be a key player in helping partner with us on figuring out how to address this issue.
Yeah, and what we provided as a foundation for that was looking more at a tiered model or a public health model to say that as Sandy said, services and service gaps are obviously a part of the picture. But we also have to really think about this from a public health perspective and building resiliency in our students, helping them take care of their general health and well-being in ways that might help prevent serious problems, and helping our continuing to do that kind of awareness training. We've done a fairly good job of that, but that continues to be an issue too. Our faculty and staff want to know how to do this and to do it well. So we have to really kind of think more comprehensively and outside of just health and counseling as the answer.
Jason Stein of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Very shortly, we'll be hearing from our reporter, Rich Kramer, who's covering the Joint Finance Committee hearing in River Falls. This brings up the state budget. In his budget proposal, Governor Tony Evers offers several measures to address mental health care gaps in Wisconsin. Expanding Medicaid is one of them. What else is in the Evers budget on this topic, and where does this topic need to go on from a legislative standpoint to get where it needs to be?
Sure. So obviously expanding Medicaid in general might provide additional access to mental health or substance abuse treatment services. In addition to that, the proposal would draw down some additional federal funds that the governor proposes using to make other investments in healthcare services. That would include in the area of crisis services for behavioral health. So currently, there's counties in some cases are paying for the non-federal share. There's a federal share, and then there's a share that's got to come from within the state. In some cases, that's coming from counties. The governor is proposing providing state matching funds for this. This would be like mobile crisis, call center, walk-in type services, designed to address difficult situations that patients would be experiencing. That would be $40 million over the 2 years of the budget. Now, obviously, that's controversial because it's linked with expanding the Medicaid program through the Federal Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And so, it's legislative leaders have said that they're not inclined to do that, so that proposal may not ultimately happen. But it has been put forward by the governor, and it's going to be debated.
Jason Stein, great to have you with us. Sandra Scott and John Achter from the Dean of Students Office at UW-Stout kind of got us kicked off on this with your testimony before the Board of Regents. Thank you all for joining us for this important topic today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the West Side returns in a minute with a live report from the public hearing on the state budget, which started earlier this hour in River Falls. Rich Kramer is there. He'll bring us up to date on what's happening. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the West Side on the Ideas Network.
Support for the WPR Mike Simonson Investigative Reporting Fellowship is provided in part by a gift from Frank L. and Mary E. Nicolay. The Mike Simonson Investigative Reporting Fellowship helps WPR provide in-depth news coverage throughout Wisconsin. Support also comes from the Pablo Center at the Confluence. Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo is an all-male international dance troupe performing the full range of ballet. April 17th in the RCU Theater. PabloCenter.org.
We're back on the West Side. I'm Dean Kallenbach in for Rich Kramer, who is on assignment for the WPR News Department, covering today's public hearing of the Joint Finance Committee in River Falls. Rich has agreed to let us pull him away from the hearing for a few minutes to bring us up to date. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Dean.
So this is the third of four scheduled public hearings on the budget. First two being held earlier this month in Janesville and in Oak Creek. Set the stage for today's hearing, if you would, a little bit.
So we're at the University of River Falls campus in the Student Center, which is pretty new, a very, very nice facility. The ballroom, the main ballroom, is full of people right now. A lot of people queued up, groups and individuals, to offer some testimony to the Joint Finance Committee.
So the theory behind spreading these hearings around to different geographies in the state is to hear what's important to the people in different parts of our state. Has any of the testimony so far focused on issues specific to our area?
A little bit. The presentation, we just got started here.
Right.
The first presenter was Dean Van Gallen, Chancellor at UW-River Falls, and he made the pitch for a $100 million-plus facility. It's going to be known as the Science and Technology Innovation Center. It's one of the Capitol building projects that was recommended by the Board of Regents, part of $2 billion worth of bonding authority for the UW to build these high-profile projects. One is at UW-Eau Claire as well, a science facility there, a chemistry building in River Falls. In Milwaukee. Chancellor Van Gallen encouraged the JFC members to forward on the full Regents recommendation, which includes the Capitol building project. The other thing that's local to the area, the city administrator for River Falls, Scott Simpson, spoke a little bit about, he would like to see more transportation funding, but one of the things that also piqued my interest was he asked for the lawmakers' support to, as they move forward, to remove the two dams in River Falls off of the Kinnickinnick River. Hmm. That project has been long, long time in the process,
yeah.
Those are the two things.
So any other themes that you're expecting in the testimony today? We heard earlier in our program, we were talking, of course, about mental health access, much of the EVERS budget speaks to health care issues.
It does. Just as I was leaving, there was a group based out of Milwaukee that was focused on mental health issues. Them and AARP was here as well, testifying in favor of expanding the Medicaid that Governor Evers would like to do. But again, I spoke with the Joint Finance Committee Republicans, including John Nygren and Alberta Darling, and they are not receptive whatsoever to expanding Medicaid. In fact, John Nygren called it a welfare program, and Democrats that spoke just after that were in disagreement on that terminology.
So if someone, Rich, is just hearing about these hearings now but wants to get in front of the committee to have their say, can they do that? And if they can, how do they do it?
Well, you can always submit a written comment, I believe. You just go to the Joint Finance Committee website at the, just search for the Wisconsin State Legislature Joint Committee on Finance. Also, there's going to be a hearing in Green Bay coming up. Pretty soon. I don't have the date right in front of me.
I think it's Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
This Friday, yeah. That's going to be the last public hearing, and then they will, they're going to be meeting in Madison. I mean, this budget process is a long, drawn-out process, but JFC does hold a big part of the power in the process. So,
well, Rich, we'll let you get back to it and listen for you this afternoon on Central Time at 4:15 and listen for your news reports on this as well. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Dean.
All right. You've been listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. The Catherine Thomas, Kaylin Schumacher, Mort Cypress helped produce this hour. Kaylin Schumacher and Kate Spranger manage publicity. I'm Dean Collin back. Tune in again next Monday for another edition of The West Side.